Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hi to all of our listeners. My name is Jordan Cockerell, and I'm back with the next episode in the Go Global series of RWS's Globally Speaking podcast. I'm the Director of Operations for HAI, RWS's latest digital offering, helping customers go global. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Francisco Gomez, CEO of Factum Global. I met the Factum Global team at the Going Global Live event in Miami earlier this year, and we were really excited to do a joint podcast together and talk about how we help organizations expand internationally. Francisco, welcome. Would you like to introduce yourself? And you can tell us a little bit about what you do at Factum Global.
Thanks, Jordan. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to collaborate with you. Yes, I'm founder and CEO of Factum Global. Our firm assists businesses and associations expand into international markets. So essentially, we have built a firm that focuses only on international expansion, from research to strategy to transformation and change management, all the way into implementation. We work very closely with our clients to help them succeed around the world.
Brilliant. Thank you for telling us a little bit about that. And I am going to dive straight into asking you lots of questions, because our listeners are going to be very excited to hear all about the insights and points we can give them when they're looking to expand internationally and they're looking to go global. So in the face of all of the global uncertainties that we're seeing at the moment and the rapid technological changes, do you have any insights that you can share with us, specifically looking at the executive outlook for global business growth?
Well, as you know, Jordan, we do a biannual survey that we just actually published results on this last quarter. And the survey findings show executives have generally positive attitudes and towards global business growth, but they're cautious. Well, they acknowledge that there are significant uncertainties like geopolitical tensions, the technological disruption that we're all facing. Most leaders see adaptability and innovation as key drivers for success. So I think they're recognizing that there are both opportunities from breakthroughs in things like AI, cybersecurity, digital transformation, but there are also risks that require a comprehensive risk management. But I think overall, there's an embracing of change, and there is a positive attitude towards pursuing new markets, partnerships, technologies that are going to help organizations achieve sustainable growth internationally.
Definitely. I think we're seeing that across the board at the moment. And I think the global technology, you know, the impact of global technology on their organizations. How do you see executives or how do you see the general feeling of executives regarding this impact? How do they see innovation and technology as something helpful, enabling them to serve their clients better? Or do you think those negative thoughts are more prominent?
Well, I think our research is very clear, and it shows that these global technology advancements like AI and cybersecurity will positively impact the ability of these executives to digitally transform and better serve their customers. However, I think that executives emphasize that there's a need to leverage these technologies responsibly. And there is a high emphasis also on what it means from an ethical perspective. So I think robust risk management frameworks are needed, and an understanding on how adapting these technologies for their organizations matches their values and how to ethically use technology to advance their goals and objectives. So I think it's a nuanced view. I think there is a view on embracing opportunities that are coming from innovation while being highly aware of those potential risks and the biases, the security vulnerabilities, the impact on the workforce, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that. And we've talked about how executives feel, but what about other parts of the organization? Is the trend typically the same?
Yeah, I think you see differences depending on where people sit in an organization. You know, one of the things that I think was interesting about this particular survey is that while before we would see more, I guess, adversity towards what's happening around the world in the lower ranks of organizations, but a more appetite for international activities, I think we're seeing something slightly different right now with the higher ranks of the organization, the C-levels, the board members, understanding that there is risk, they're cautious, but they're more positive about the need to do international business and what that can bring to the organization. So there is slight differences, but overall, there is a positive attitude towards conducting international business and the role of technology in that expansion.
No, it's great to hear your thoughts on that. And I think we're definitely seeing the same in terms of trends on our side as well. You know, we're getting more and more of these startup companies wanting to actually look at localization as a way to expand internationally. And I think when I met with your colleagues at the Going Global Live event in Miami, we were certainly seeing that people were asking the right questions. There was a little bit of nervousness there. And I think we're going to come on to AI at some point today because that's the hot topic for everybody right now. But, you know, there was some nervousness around AI, but I think people were generally more accepting and sort of wanted to look at that as a way to move forwards and saw that as a sort of way to move forwards with their international footprint more quickly.
And I think we all are, right? I mean, we don't know what's coming. We all know it's coming, but we don't know exactly what's coming. So obviously that generates a little bit of anxiety on people's sides, and it's understandable. But I think that the sooner that leaders understand that it's not an if, but a when, and embrace it, then the sooner they're going to be ready to really take advantage.
Can you tell us a little bit more about new business opportunities and drivers of success? And what are the innovative approaches to stay competitive an organization can consider?
So a lot of what we're hearing both from our clients and from this research that we recently completed is that organizations are looking at pursuing geographical expansion as a way to diversify, obviously, their line of business, their revenue generation, but also to diversify risk. Regions like Southeast Asia, Africa, and Latin America are top of mind. There are specific countries within those areas. You know, you look at places like Vietnam, Thailand, Korea, and Southeast Asia are really attracting a lot of investment. Within Africa, you have Kenya, countries like Gabon, South Africa, that are also in the lens of a lot of people. And in Latin America, you know, not surprisingly, obviously, Mexico and Brazil are on top of mind. However, other countries like Colombia and Ecuador, Peru, and Chile are also countries that people are interested in. So there's a lot of geographical expansion right now that's happening, a lot of looking into where is the next opportunity. But we're talking also about technology and leveraging those digital technologies for process optimization, for data insights, and to enhance customer experiences is something that we're seeing quite a lot with our clients. So I think many are focused on strategic initiatives, cross-border projects facilitated by technologies, but they're all focused on sustainable growth strategies. And that's something that I think it's also worth mentioning is that agility to adapt to change and building that global mindset that is required for workforces that they try to innovate and maintain a competitive edge in different parts of the world. So I think I'm hearing all the right things. Like you were saying, they're asking all the right questions. I think they're giving us all the right answers too, as to what are some of the things that leaders are focused on to ensure that they're taking advantage of all those opportunities.
And you mentioned some key markets there. I guess just to expand a little further on that, where do you see leaders wanting to do business? Can you see any rising trends there?
Yes, I think it will come as no surprise, but you know, Southeast Asia and even all of Asia Pacific continues to be very attractive. There is a lot going on there. If you are not currently pursuing business in Southeast Asia, you're really missing out. But we see companies start to look at Africa, and it's still early. And you know, everyone is sort of trying to figure out where it's a complex region with a lot of countries and a lot of opportunity, but you have to really figure out what is your strategy. Yet Africa, it's supposed to be it within the next few years. And if you don't have an Africa strategy right now, you're really going to be left behind, right? So I highly encourage everyone to think about, is Africa good for my organization? And if so, start thinking about what it means for you and what are the markets within that region where you should be paying attention and doing your missions to get to know the landscape and get to know the players, et cetera. So those two are huge. Latin America obviously has some interest, but I think those two are sort of the hottest places where people are finding growth. Africa, probably one of the few places, if not the only place, where you can expect double-digit growth here in the next few years. So again, it's a hot topic right now with our clients, and it really came through on the research.
Interesting that you focused on Africa there. We, RWS, merged with another LSP last year, and we've definitely seen a big sort of driver towards Africa on our side and Southeast Asia as well. I think we've been noticing that maybe for the last couple of years. You know, that growth has really gone top level in the last couple of years as well. So it's interesting that we can expect to continue to see that as well. Go on, if you want to say something else, you're welcome to.
I was just going to say that I think so, that we're just seeing the beginning, right? It's in Southeast Asia, it's been going on for a little while, and so it's not surprising to many, but Africa is just the beginning of the Africa time. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, just how fast and how well it develops here in the next few years.
Interesting, exciting. And the number of languages that we can cover across Africa, wow.
It is.
That'll be interesting to see.
It is amazing, yes. And it also makes it very challenging, right? It's not easy. And a lot of people that I speak to are, I don't know if the word is afraid, but they're very cautious about how to go about it because they don't know the region. They don't know exactly how to pursue it. And so it's important for organizations to really think about how they can get support they need and the partnerships that they need in order to succeed in this market.
Absolutely. And have that strategy that you mentioned before. I'm going to ask, in sort of this context, why are cultural sensitivities so important to consider? And if you've got any examples that you can give us, something that's been successful in one country but not in another, for example, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, we've all heard those horror stories of major corporations that have made mistakes because they didn't think about the meaning of an image on a logo. You know, think of Starbucks entering the Middle East, or because they don't take into account colors and what that means in a certain culture, or even words, when they pick words or name things that mean a different thing in a different language, right? Like the Nova car situation that we're all familiar with, that in Spanish means it doesn't go. Right. So you're essentially calling a car does not go car. So those things can happen if you're not globally minded, if you don't think into account culture and you don't understand and you don't take your time to really figure out how to localize your not only your offerings and your products and services, but also the way in which you do business. I think we have a tendency, we're here in the US, you're looking at from a European lens, from a UK lens. And we all have a tendency to think that our way, it's better, even if we deny that we believe so. It shows when we're doing things because this is what we know. And being able to break out of that and understand that there are other ways of doing things, and that if you want to be successful in another country, you really have to adapt to their local culture and the way that they do things. It's critical. And if you ask me, what is the number one thing that you think is the skill that a leader needs to have this day and age, is that adaptability and that global mindset. Without that, it's really difficult for you to be able to do international business successfully. I don't care how good you are at what you do. I don't care how technically savvy you are. If you don't have that cultural sensitivity, it's going to be very difficult for you to succeed in international markets.
I would agree. And we see a lot of that with the customers that we work with as well. I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the colors, the images. You know, we see that a lot where, particularly in retail, you know, we're looking to launch into a new market and you see models, you know, certain colors, skin types, and you sort of think, well, are these images going to be accepted in another culture? Let's say if you're looking to go into the Arabic market, for example, are we okay with women wearing underwear as a model, you know, actually posing for these, you know, selling these other products? You sort of start to look, oh, maybe we should do this a little bit differently. And I know we've had customers come to us and look at colors for campaigns. Specifically, we had one where we were looking to work with a global brand looking at creating cameras in different colors. And red is not a color that's accepted in all markets. So this is the consultation that you guys, I guess, come across every day. And we see, you know, with localization, it's not always sort of thought about by our customers. It's often, it can often be an afterthought. But if you're, you know, we like to say, if you're not speaking globally, if you're not speaking to someone in their own language, you're not really speaking to them. And like you said, it's not just about the language. You've got to get every aspect of that right.
Yeah. And one thing that we see some businesses fail at is that they think the translation is enough, right? And sometimes you do need to translate so that you speak literally their language. Other times you don't need to translate, but you really do need to understand how to communicate, right? And what it means to the business in a certain place. And sometimes you're coming at it from a very good place with a good heart. So I'll give you an example. You know, we've worked with several organizations that have been prioritizing diversity, equity, and inclusion here in the United States because it's a hot thing, right? It's an important thing. Everyone is trying to figure out how to be more inclusive, how to be more diverse. But diversity, equity, and inclusion in the United States is very different from DEI in the UK or Singapore or Argentina or anywhere else in the world. And we've seen situations where there is so much focus on the US lens of diversity and inclusion that you exclude those from outside the United States because you're not thinking about what it means for them, right? So we all know that in the US we have minority groups, you know, like the African-Americans, the Black population, the Hispanics, you know, there's still a big, huge emphasis on gender. All of those things are important within the U.S. When you look at Singapore, for example, you know, country identity is still very important in terms of when you think about diversity and inclusion, right? People that come from an Indian descent versus Chinese versus Mali. That is top of mind in Singapore, and it's not top of mind in the United States. So understanding those differences and being able to respect that is going to make you more successful and is going to avoid you making mistakes or help you avoid making mistakes that could be very, very costly for your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the stories that always comes to my mind when we're talking about costly mistakes is around accessibility. You know, again, that's a large topic at the moment across industries. And Domino's were sued because they had a customer who was blind who couldn't order a pizza. They obviously had to make their app and their website accessible now for blind people because they lost the legal case. So I think, you know, that would have been quite costly for them. But they need to start thinking, and all organizations need to start thinking about cultural differences, but also making sure your content's accessible. We've got new laws coming in across Europe. I know the US has typically been quite good at that, but that's something that people will start to need to consider. And that consultation with people who know what they're talking about when you're expanding internationally into those markets, I think this is going to be even more and more important.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think paying attention to those regulations is critical. And it's going to hopefully help us understand a little bit better the landscape, but it's also going to make it more challenging because it's not going to be the same all over the world.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, if we shift on to the topic we knew we were going to get to, AI, we obviously need to manage change and fears. So AI's expanding role is reshaping global business now. It's enhancing productivity, creating new business opportunities. Even if change and risk can lead to growth opportunities, I imagine there's also some concerns about the ethical use you mentioned a little bit earlier, biases in algorithms and malicious applications. Can you tell us more about this? Does this underscore the need for a more robust risk management?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You essentially answered the question within the question. The survey data, that research that we just completed, the data reflects this nuanced view, and I believe it's on point. Executives are enthusiastic about the productivity gains and new opportunities from AI, but they're very cognizant of the ethical risk about bias, privacy violations, the deep fakes, you know, this whole notion of autonomous weapons, workforce displacement, and much more. You know, there are all these things that come with AI, and it's both a very scary situation. I recently was in another venue in a webinar when I was discussing this with a colleague of mine, the CEO of a tech company. And he was saying, anyone who tells you that the AI revolution is not scary is lying to you, right? It is scary. However, it's also full of opportunity. And those regulations that you were talking about are going to be key. I think countries are focused on trying to understand how to keep up with the rapid advancement of AI and what it means for society. There are reasons to be scared about what is possible, but there is also reason to be very positive about how technology can really benefit our lives if used properly and if regulated properly. So there are widespread calls for responsible transformation. There's calls for rigorous governance, human oversight. And I think there is a need for proactive risk management frameworks, as you were saying, to capitalize on that potential of AI, but while mitigating those downsides, right? So I think it's a robust risk management mechanism is seen across the board as critical for deploying AI in a safely way.
Now, it's really interesting. And like you said, it's not a matter of if, it's when. It's okay that it's scary, but we are going to have to adapt. And I think you're right. As long as we're considering all of these points and making sure that we're managing that risk effectively, it will progress.
Yeah, and I will tell you, some of these things we have been going through for a while as well, right? So if you don't think of AI necessarily, but you think of technology at large, you know, that risk management comes in things like, what do you do when one of your employees is traveling to another country with a device of your own, right? How do you protect that intellectual property that you have within that computer if you're going into a country where perhaps the rules and regulations are not as strict? So we've been dealing with these types of things in the past. Now, the problem is with AI, the opportunities are endless. So you have to really think about how do you incorporate a technology/AI strategy within an organization that it's consistent with the overarching organizational strategy and that it mitigates those risks that are going to emerge from the use of those technologies. So it becomes more and more important to have norms, to have things in place, processes that enable you to secure your information and to comply with the regulations around the world.
Absolutely. And I guess with all these changes and fears, do people still believe that doing international business is good for their organization, and especially with the current global economy?
Yes, that's good news. And I'm glad to hear that because there is also that risk of inaction, right? So we've been talking about managing risk of doing things, of incorporating technology, of going into another market. But what is the risk of not doing? In a world that is more and more rapidly working together and where doing business across borders becomes increasingly easy with the use of technology, what is the risk of not doing it and not being in the game? Your organization, your company is going to be at risk at essentially losing competitiveness and perhaps even at risk altogether of not being in business after a while. So I think that that's reflected in the survey with 84% of respondents believing that doing business internationally is good for their organization. And based on their forecast for global economy over the next 6 months, they still to have a positive attitude towards that. So while challenges and like geopolitical issues and economic uncertainties are acknowledged, The prevailing sentiment is that global diversification provides vital new business opportunities. It provides market access, talent pools, and strategic partnerships that outweigh the risks of being isolated, right? So I think it really comes down to that is, are you going to be on the game or are you not going to be on the game? And if you are not doing international business, you're really missing huge opportunities.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think we've kind of established that we think the risk of not doing this is greater. So if you had one tip for organizations who are looking to go global, what would it be?
I think I would talk about the importance of market research, to make decisions that are driven by data, to have a solid strategy that is nimble and that it's constantly on review, where when you're testing new things and you're experimenting, all of those things. But I do believe that the one most important thing, and we talked about this earlier, is really thinking about how to develop a diverse, globally minded leadership team and workforce with strong intercultural competencies. There is nothing more important than that in this day and age. Too often, cultural barriers derail even the most well-planned global initiatives. So yes, I'm talking about market research, data-driven strategies. However, you can have all those things done. And if you don't have this globally minded team, your global initiatives can fail. So having decision makers who can effectively navigate different business environments and contexts is crucial for international success. I believe that intercultural fluency throughout the organization should be a top priority for everyone.
So leading on from that, how would you build a globally minded leadership team?
That's a great question. I think there are a number of things you need to do. The first one, most important, is to give those existing leaders the opportunity to be exposed to international markets, right? So if you have projects that are ongoing, sending them there, you cannot understand what's happening in a place unless you see it for yourself. If you're sitting on a desk in your home market, making decisions about what's going on in a second market, you're making mistakes. So exposure is number one. Two is you need to do an assessment. Do you have the right leaders? Do you have the right people? Some of those people can be trained. We at Factum Global offer training, for example, that helps organizations build that global mindset. We do it for not only leaders and executives, but also at all levels of the organization. So training is critical for those employees or for those leaders that you really want to keep. But then also understanding that you're going to have to hire new people. And those people can come from anywhere in the world. One of the things that is great about all these technological advancements is that now you can hire people anywhere around the world, and there are mechanisms to reduce risk, to make it easy, and to lower some of those barriers that we used to have. So you would be adding additional cultural know-how in different parts of the world, different perspectives, different points of view, and all of those things together are going to help you build a globally minded organization that is going to be that much more successful.
Thank you, Francisco. That's great advice for all of our listeners. And I know that you've just launched a report called the Factum Global Business Sentiment Survey. This includes some of the insights and data that we've discussed today, and obviously much more, where you measured and tracked the sentiments on global business. For our listeners interested in knowing more, we'll add the link in the description. And I just want to say thank you for joining me today, Francisco. It's been a great discussion. And thanks to all of our listeners as well.
Jordan, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here with you. Clearly, you and I can talk about this for hours. I hope that it's useful for everyone who might be listening, and delighted to be here with you and look forward to the next opportunity.
Thanks, Francisco. Thanks, everyone. Take care.